上学英语四级应试技能与全真模拟试题，710分。
Model Test 1 Part 3 Listening Comprehension Section A Directions In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, one or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once.After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
11. Do you think parents' love for their children is selfless?
Absolutely. No bond is stronger than that between parents and children.
Question. What does the man mean? Twelve. My parents make it a point to spend some time with me every week.Because they believe that communication is very important. How do you think?
I can't agree with you more. Actually, my parents do the same. They talk to me about my friends, school, activities, dreams, and hopes.
Question. How does the man think in this regard?
13. Peggy, can you tell me how to keep love alive in the relationship with my wife?
Try spending some time with her every day, and it can make you closer.
Question. What are they talking about?
14.Hey, how do you spend your weekends usually?
I go to see my mother, a 72-year-old widow, every other week, and go shopping with my wife for the rest of the time.
Question. What do we know about the man's mother?
15.You know, I've always been on the road so much. That's why both my wife and I would like to catch up on each other's lives whenever I'm back home.
That's very considerate of you to do so. Then go ahead.
Question. What conclusion can we draw from this conversation?
16. Some American parents are now wondering why they can't stop their children from taking drug.
Well, to my mind, it's their indifferent attitude that is to blame.
Question. What can you learn from the man's response? 17. Yesterday, we had a heated debate over the issue of monthly allowance for children.
Oh, what happened then?
Well, 30 out of 90 is against it.
Question. What's the ratio of supporting this idea? 18. Mom, I've decided to go skydiving 3 hours every Saturday and all day Sunday.
Really? But are you sure you can handle it? What about your homework and your coming term paper?
Question. How does the mother feel about the boys' after-school activities?
Now you will hear two long conversations. Conversation 1.
Don't you just hate the beginning of the semester, Shiva?
Yeah, the beginning of the semester always makes me kind of crazy. Things get so frustrating and confusing if I don't do everything I need to do. And even then, things may not work out the way I thought they would.
Yeah, usually I try to prepare myself and take care of all the details so I have as few surprises as possible. I'd rather be over-prepared than under-prepared. Like I get really frustrated if I can't add a class that I need. So, if I want to add a class, I get there early for the teacher's signature.
Right, that's what I do. Then, if the teacher lets me into the class, I immediately turn in my add slip so that I'm registered in the class.
Yeah, I try to do that as soon as I can. There are so many details, and if you forget something, it causes a lot of problems.
If the teacher says there's no room in the class, I get really anxious. But I don't give up. I usually go to the teacher's office and ask if I can be added to the class.
That's smart. It's so important to take it one step at a time, so you don't feel like it's too much. Another thing I do is I always buy my books right away, so I can look at them before the class starts. Then I don't feel so overwhelmed by the class when I get there.
I buy my books early too. The lines at the bookstore are so long, it can drive you crazy. So I always start reading the textbooks so I'm not wasting my time.
The first day of class is really important because that's when you find out about the work for the semester. That's when I decide if I'm going to stay in the class or drop it. Once classes begin and I've taken care of all the details, I feel much better.
That's for sure.
Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
19. What is the best title?
What is not mentioned in the conversation?
21. How is the man's response when the woman says that she will never give up even if there is no room in the class?
22. What can we learn about their views on handling school days? 2.
Hello.
Hi, Sally. This is Phil.
Great to hear from you, Phil. How have you been doing?
To tell you the truth, I'm very worried about our final examinations next month. I can't sleep.
I sympathize. I went through the same thing last year.
That's exactly why I'm calling you. Do you have any suggestions for coping with anxiety? You know how I hate exams.
Well, last year the university offered a stress management course at about this time. Have you been in contact with the student help services?
No, I haven't had time.
Funny, isn't it? Just when students need help most, we can't afford time to get it.
Well, perhaps I should find out more about this stress management course, since I've got to get better.
I suggest you call the health service tomorrow. They open at 9 a.m.
Thanks, Sally. I'll let you know how it goes.
Best of luck, and have a good night's sleep.
That's easier said than done.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
23. What is the main topic of this conversation?
24. Why is Phil worried?
25. Why does Phil turn to Sally for advice?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center. Passage 1. I taught in Seoul, Korea, and I thought I had prepared myself pretty well with all the necessary travel books and my helpful Korean-American roommate. I was really excited about teaching because it was one of my first paying jobs as a teacher. I began each class by introducing myself, and I could see the excitement in my students' faces as they encountered a real California girl. Their enthusiasm made me feel so comfortable that I let them ask me some questions. To my amazement, I was confronted with some very personal questions. How old are you? Are you married? Why aren't you married? Why did you come to Korea? I was really shocked and overwhelmed. I couldn't believe that the students could ask such personal questions and expect honest answers. After this happened in several classes, I realized there must be some cultural rule I was missing. The first thing I did was to stop giving the students the opportunity to ask me these questions. And the second was to find out why they thought these questions were appropriate. I later found out that these questions are considered acceptable in Korea because age and marriage are used to establish status. And this is not information that is considered private or personal. Because of the close ties of family relationships in Korea, my students were concerned that I had traveled so far and left my family behind. Once I realized that there was culture and genuine concern at play, I felt much more comfortable about my first experiences. But in my year-long stay, I no longer gave my students the opportunity to ask those questions.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard.
26. What is the passage about?
What did the questions asked by the students mainly focus on?
What made the woman feel comfortable later on?
2. The countryside of Britain is well known for its beauty and many contrasts, its bare mountains, lakes, rivers and woods, and its long, often wild, coastline. Many of the most beautiful areas are national parks and are protected from development. When British people think of farmlands, as well as open spaces, they imagine cows or sheep in green fields, surrounded by short trees, stone walls, or fields of wheat. Many people associate the countryside with peace and relaxation. They spend their free time walking or cycling there, or go to the country for a picnic or a pub lunch. Only a few people who live in the country work on farms. Many go to work in towns, and many others dream of living in the country, where they believe they would have a better and healthier lifestyle. America has many areas of wild and beautiful scenery with little population. It is common to see small farms surrounded by hills and green areas. In Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, and other Midwestern states, fields of corn or wheat reach to the horizon, and there are many miles between towns. Only about 20% of Americans live outside cities and towns. Life may be difficult for people who live in the country. Services like hospitals and schools may be farther away, and going shopping can mean driving long distances. Some people even have to drive from their homes to the main road, where their mails are left in a box. In spite of the disadvantages, many people who live in the country say that they like the safe, clean, attractive environment. But their children often move to a town or city as soon as they can.
Questions 29 to 32 are based on the passage you have just heard.
What is the passage about?
Which of the following is untrue?
31. What kind of picture is presented at the mention of American countryside?
32. Why do so many people like to live in the country? 3. When my husband and I first found out that we were going to have a baby, we were thrilled. But at my very first doctor's appointment, I got kind of scared. Because before I even had a physical examination, the doctor set me up for an appointment for genetic counseling and several other tests to see if there was anything wrong with my baby. I feel lucky to have good medical insurance and to be able to get good care while I'm pregnant. But it's scary to realize that it's now a normal part of many pregnancies to have all kinds of tests to find out the health of the baby very early on. To find out about possible birth defects and genetic diseases. I had a friend who just refused to have any of these tests. She said, she just couldn't face the possibility of knowing that the baby might have a terrible defect or a serious illness that meant the baby couldn't live. And then she might have to make some horrible, painful choices. She said she just wanted to go on with hope. I don't know how I feel about this. To think that the tests might find something that could be treated by doctors even before the baby is born, and that I didn't make it possible for the doctors to do this seems horrible. To think that the tests might show that my child has a terrible birth defect or might not live after the birth is also horrible. I know the tests are supposed to help, but in a way they just make being pregnant that much harder, because no matter what we decide to do, the consequences can be so serious and I always have to live with the results of my choice.
Questions 33 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard.
33. How was the situation the woman was faced with?
34. Which of the four choices cannot be inferred?
35. Which of the four choices is not a purpose of taking some medical tests after being pregnant?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks, numbered from 36 to 43, with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written.
Now listen to the passage.
All of us communicate with one another non-verbally, as well as with words. Most of the time, we're not aware that we're doing it. We gesture with eyebrows or a hand, meet someone else's eyes and look away, change positions in a chair. These actions, we assume, are occasional. However, in recent years, researchers have discovered that there is a system to them almost as consistent and understandable as language. One important kind of body language is eye behavior. Americans are careful about how and when they meet one another's eyes. In our normal conversation, each eye contact lasts only about a second before one or both of us look away. When two Americans look searchingly into each other's eyes, they become more intimate. Therefore, we carefully avoid this, except in suitable situations. Researchers who are engaged in the study of communication through body movement are not prepared to spell out a precise vocabulary of gesture. When an American rubs his nose, it may mean he's disagreeing with someone or refusing something. But there are other possible interpretations too. Another example. When a student in conversation with a professor holds the older man's eyes a little longer than usual, it can be a sign of respect. It can be a challenge to the professor's authority. It can be something else entirely. The researchers look for patterns in the situation, not for separate, meaningful gesture. Communication between human beings would be just dull if we were all done with words. Now the passage will be read again.
All of us communicate with one another non-verbally, as well as with words. Most of the time, we're not aware that we're doing it. We gesture with eyebrows or a hand, meet someone else's eyes and look away, change positions in a chair. These actions, we assume, are occasional. However, in recent years, researchers have discovered that there is a system to them, almost as consistent and understandable as language. One important kind of body language is eye behavior. Americans are careful about how and when they meet one another's eyes. In our normal conversation, each eye contact lasts only about a second before one or both of us look away. When two Americans look searchingly into each other's eyes, they become more intimate. Therefore, we carefully avoid this, except in suitable situations. Researchers who are engaged in the study of communication through body movement are not prepared to spell out a precise vocabulary of gesture. When an American rubs his nose, it may mean he's disagreeing with someone or refusing something. But there are other possible interpretations too. Another example. When a student in conversation with a professor holds the older man's eyes a little longer than usual, it can be a sign of respect. It can be a challenge to the professor's authority. It can be something else entirely. The researchers look for patterns in the situation, not for a separate meaningful gesture. Communication between human beings would be just dull if it were all done with words.
Now the passage will be read for the third time. All of us communicate with one another non-verbally, as well as with words. Most of the time, we're not aware that we're doing it. We gesture with eyebrows or a hand, meet someone else's eyes and look away, change positions in a chair. These actions, we assume, are occasional. However, in recent years, researchers have discovered that there is a system to them almost as consistent and understandable as language. One important kind of body language is eye behavior. Americans are careful about how and when they meet one another's eyes. In our normal conversation, each eye contact lasts only about a second before one or both of us look away. When two Americans look searchingly into each other's eyes, they become more intimate. Therefore, we carefully avoid this, except in suitable situations. Researchers who are engaged in the study of communication through body movement are not prepared to spell out a precise vocabulary of gesture. When an American rubs his nose, it may mean he's disagreeing with someone or refusing something. But there are other possible interpretations too. Another example. When a student in conversation with a professor holds the older man's eyes a little longer than usual, it can be a sign of respect. It can be a challenge to the professor's authority. It can be something else entirely. The researchers look for patterns in the situation, not for separate meaningful gesture. Communication between human beings would be just dull if we were all done with words.